chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I'm going to be playing most of this hour an interview that and the reason why we're going to use a complete hour is an interview that Alex Jones had with Roger Stone. Roger Stone just has too much insight and savvy about politics in this country to ignore. And that's why we're going to be covering this whole interview, this first hour. So here we go with Alex Jones interviewing Roger Stone.
This will be a close, hard-fought election, and it will be deeply affected by what happens in this impeachment saga, which is yet to roll out. Again, my strongest warning to the president is do not view anything in Washington as Republicans versus Democrats. That is outdated thinking. This is the insiders versus an outsider. This is the status quo versus a disruptor. This is the peak that they have for Donald Trump because he stopped this country's headlong lurch for globalism. He has destroyed their plans to divide up the spoils. So I guess my message to the president is take this very seriously, continue to demand total transparency, stay very focused on those states with wobbly Republican senators. That is where this fight will be won or lost. The greatest obstacle to the president's reelection was the overconfidence of his supporters. I have absolute confidence in Donald Trump's ability as a campaigner, absolute confidence in his stamina, absolute confidence in his energy, absolute confidence in his communication skills. But everywhere I would go across the country, people would tell me, Trump supporters would tell me, it's going to be a landslide. It's going to be a cakewalk. It's going to be a walk in the park. None of those things are true. They're not true. They weren't true then. They're not true now. But what the impeachment inquiry has done is galvanize the president's support as never before. You know, Alex, I read the Proverbs every night and every morning. I'm doing a lot of praying, as you might imagine. I pray for the president and his family because he is the one thing that stands between globalism freedom. He is the one thing that is an obstacle to one world government and a total surrender of American sovereignty. He believes in American exceptionalism and the promise of America. He's a very, very strong guy. I worked for Nixon. I worked for Dole. I've known some tough men. Donald Trump is the toughest guy I've ever met, and he isn't doing this for himself. He's doing it for us. This has cost him $2.5 billion of his net worth. He went from being universally liked to being reviled by roughly half the people. So he's not doing this for himself to have a bigger house or a bigger
plane. He's a man on a mission. It's very Christ-like.
There's no question about it. So I appreciate those who are praying for me and my family, and I urge you to pray for the president and for the country and for all of our leaders.
Accused Obama of treason for illegally spying on his campaign. The criminal investigation has now been openly announced by the Attorney General last night. The planets are aligned. And Roger Stone, the man at the center of so many of these crossroads, joins us live right now. Roger Stone, thank you so much for joining us, my friend.
Alex, it's great to be back on InfoWars. Let me say at the top, I know you understand there are certain topics that I cannot address, and I don't intend to do so today, but I am permitted to talk about American politics and the current state of affairs. And because I worked for three Republican presidents, because I'm a veteran of 10 Republican presidential campaigns, I do think I bring some historic perspective to the current impeachment saga going on in Washington. Let me say at the top, I stand 100% with President Donald Trump. The reason they wish to remove him is because he is a disruptor, because he has interrupted their march to globalism. The two-party duopoly was taking this country over a cliff. And who came forward, most improbably, but a New York billionaire with cojones the size of basketballs, with a reform agenda, which by any objective analysis has worked. We have a boom economy. We are redoing our trade agreements. He is struggling to seal our border. He is restoring the basic values on which this country was founded. That's why they want to get rid of him.
Roger, there's so many things here to tackle, so many things that you're gracious enough to spend some time with us, but you are the former Nixon aide who experienced the 1974 impeachment drama, and you can obviously offer advice to Trump on what he's going through and what's unfolding, and this coup that's now out in the open, and the deep staters still continuing it now with the latest Ukraine hoax. What is your advice to President Trump on October 25th, 2019?
Well, first of all, let us analyze the situation. Because I did have a front row seat during the Nixon impeachment. I also had a front row seat during the Clinton impeachment. And I must say what is going on now in Washington is completely unlike either one of those processes. Now, I was one who criticized House Republicans for impeaching Bill Clinton over an inappropriate relationship with an intern. I thought it was a mistake. It turned out to be an enormous political mistake. But the truncated time frame here is the important thing to recognize. It took 2 years for the then dominant only media, the mainstream media, to beat on President Richard Nixon before they could mount an effort for impeachment. He had just won the largest landslide in American political history. But you had a monolithic media, ABC, NBC, CBS, The New York Times, The Washington Post, The LA Times, and in those days, very popular and powerful news magazines like Newsweek and Time. Still, it took a relentless tsunami of bad news before the situation in the country was such that President Nixon had lost his base of support in the country and no longer had a governing coalition. At that point, his support among both House and Senate Republicans collapsed, and he resigned for the good of the country. Had he not resigned, he clearly would have been convicted in the Senate. But there's one important distinction. Nixon was, unfortunately, guilty of a crime. He didn't know about the Watergate break-in in advance, as that lunatic Nick Ackerman keeps saying on MSNBC with Ari Melber. That is false. There is no evidence or proof to that extent. But he did get sucked into the cover-up by John Dean. And therefore, he was impeached because he was guilty of a crime. Bill Clinton was impeached but not convicted. I think he should have been impeached for selling military and missile targeting secrets to the Chinese in return for campaign contributions, which is treasonous, but not because of his dalliance with Monica Lewinsky. By the way, Republicans lost seats in the next congressional election. That was a complete misfire. But in both cases, in the case of both Nixon and in the case of Clinton, there was due process. There was an open, completely transparent process. You got critical mass for Nixon's removal in 1974. The Republicans never reached critical mass among public in terms of public support in the Clinton impeachment. This process is quite different. I think that those who sit back and say, well, the House may impeach the president, but surely the Republican Senate will never convict him, I think are being naive. The president is in for an incredible fight because his critics, those in the mainstream media and their handmaidens in the two-party duopoly, are hoping that this tsunami of attacks on him day after day, night after night, will wear his support down in the states where there are wobbly Republican senators so they feel comfortable voting for his removal, despite the fact that he has committed no crime. I have seen no evidence of a crime. The American people have not seen any evidence of a crime. So this proceeding is very different than those that have gone before. In terms of what I would do right now if I were him, he has had an incredible fundraising juggernaut for his reelection campaign. Last time I looked, he had $400 million. He's on his way to $500 million. He's outraising all of the Democrats, pulled more money out of California, I think, than all the Democrats combined. I would begin utilizing that money to advertise both digitally and on radio and on broadcast media in those states where there are Republican senators who may be thinking about joining this lynch mob. As long as the president remains more popular in those states than those individual senators, they will be loath to cast a vote against the president, particularly based on the thinnest reed that we have seen so far.
From your mouth to Trump and the rest of the world's ears, I know you've got to be careful about different areas that you're even able to get into. But just in general, the whole impeachment and Trump coming out and saying Obama engaged in treason for his activities against Trump. And I think that shows Trump is going to war now. I mean, this is I think we're about to see the counterpunching Tyrannosaurus Rex Godzilla attack Tokyo. Is that a good prediction?
Well, I'm not going to speak specifically about today's news, but I will say this. The Trump I know is a brawler. I read a fake news story the other day that said that Trump would resign in return for a pledge that he not be prosecuted for non-existent crimes.
Hold that. That's so big. Hold that till we go to break, because that's a huge answer that people want to have you flesh that out when we come back, Roger. And there's so many points I want to get to. Roger Stone is here. Has the withdrawal of our troops from Syria helped or hurt the president? Again, what advice would you give the president on all these issues? What do you think of the House Republicans' effort to crush the impeachment hearings, to crash into it? Donald Trump Jr., will Hillary run? So much more with Roger Stone exclusively here. Where's Roger Stone been? We're not allowed to tell you. There's just so much free speech in America. Well, it's been 4+ months since Roger's done any interviews. And I got to tell you, distance makes the heart grow fond. I've always liked Roger. He's a smart guy, funny guy, incredible history he knows. An encyclopedia when it comes to politics, and just no Roger Stone. But here he is with us, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, what a story behind the scenes, but we can't get into that. Roger, that cliffhanger there, we're hearing by former building managers and people, just resign, Trump, and everything will be all right. And CNN hosts go, yes, I'm sure a deal can be made where we'll let you, you know, be sent to an island somewhere. So the deep state's telegraphing, hey, it's time to give up. I guess kind of like John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, was attacking a British ship three times his size, and his ship was sinking on fire, and they said, hey, you know, give up. And he said, I've only begun to fight. He ended up taking their ship, and then his sunk, but he still took theirs. So he said, I've only begun to fight. So Roger Stone's here. He's only begun to fight. What about Trump? You know him better than probably anybody in politics, 40-plus years, used to be his wingman. Will Trump resign? What do you expect him to do under this pressure? He seems to be thriving under it.
Yeah, I think there's zero chance that he will resign. I think that's wishful thinking by some in the political establishment. Looking at a headline here for Mediate, Roger Stone set to violate gag order and break silence to talk impeachment. I will do nothing here today to break the gag order of the court. We're talking about issues that are completely unrelated to me or my case. In this case, Donald Trump, as I have said here many times, is a brawler. He has resources. He has the bully pulpit. One of the things I think that is hurting him is that you have a monolithic mainstream media, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and you have the slow turn of Fox. Listening to Fox during the daytime, during daytime hours, is just like listening to CNN. There is just an avalanche of disinformation. Their nighttime lineup can't be beat. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham. I think this is the prime source for the American people who want to learn the truth about what's going on in Washington and in politics. But the president still has the bully pulpit. He still can command coverage. And he is, I think, the greatest counterpuncher in American politics.
Looking at the way the impeachment's being done, the polls show it's backfiring. I know you can speak to those as a real expert, but just the optics of secret hearings that don't follow the normal law and procedure in the House on impeachment, and then the transcripts do come out and Schiff's telling people what to say. I know you can't even get into him. I mean, it's in fact, let me just ask you this. What do you make of the way the proceedings are being done?
Well, I think the American people like transparency. They want due process. They'd like to know all the facts. Beyond that, I'm not going to address it. I do think it's interesting the way Donald Trump Jr. has emerged as an incredibly effective advocate for his father. I saw him on with Sean Hannity the other night, and I rated him a 10 out of 10. I mean, first of all, he clearly has an affinity for politics. He's deeply committed to his father's agenda. I think he's the single most articulate spokesman for the America First policies of this president. He's really come into his own, and I think he's going to be a major voice in this fight. The others are obvious. Matt Gaetz, Mark Meadows, Lee Zeldin, Jim Jordan. These people would normally just be backbenchers among House Republicans, but they are emerging as leaders. So it is fascinating to watch, but I think it also affects our politics across the board. In other words, this entire question of Ukraine has not only put the president under fire, but I think he's badly damaged the candidacy of Joe Biden. Now, in truth, the Democratic establishment does not want Biden to be their nominee. While they may have great affection for him for past service, none of them think he is a strong candidate. I don't think he can hold together the party's corporate wing and their growingly powerful socialist wing. And they need a candidate who can do that. I have watched terrific interviews with Doug Schoen and Mark Penn, who I think are two of the smartest guys I know in American politics, both guys I've known for 30-plus years, and they both believe that Hillary is likely to run. Now, before people scoff, they should recognize that there is a deep well of support for Hillary Clinton within the Democratic Party and among Democratic primary voters, that she could bridge that gap between the corporate wing and the socialist wing, that the Clinton fundraising machine is certainly intact, and there is definitely fatigue regarding Joe Biden. She could win a multi-candidate race with 25% of the vote. She could certainly win in Iowa, in New Hampshire. Whether she has the physical stamina for a campaign, whether the same issues that defeated her last time would rise to defeat her this time, is, I think, a reasonable question. But I don't think she's out of it. I think she may yet run, and if she does, she should not be underestimated. On the other hand, I do think President Trump would beat her again, probably a little worse than last time. But only time will tell.
Roger, my head is just swimming here with questions I want to get into. When we come back, you began to get into it, but we know the president is either watching this right now or will be watching it later. And obviously, a lot of folks have gone to great lengths to cut you off from the president because he respects your countenance so much. That's been in the news. General Kelly, others sought to keep you and I from being able to communicate with the president because he resonates with the common sense things that we talk about. So when we come back, I'd like you to really brief the president as much as you can, recapping some of what you said, but also getting into just how you called it on Fiona Hill, how you called it on Ambassador William Taylor 2 years ago on record on this broadcast and on the War Room that you hosted. I mean, we now live in a point where this man can't even host shows here, and that's his business. His life was a talk show host. For that, a Fox pundit paid there. So Roger Stone here, an American fighting for all of us, and I always liked Roger. But then, you know, they talk about how he's a villain and all this stuff. I never saw any evidence of that. Everything he ever said was true, because truth is what's powerful. But now that he's in the crucible, and now that he is the man in the arena, he's the man in the arena. I just really respect him and admire him and feel for him because, let me tell you, we're all Roger Stone now. He is the modern Spartacus. We'll be right back. Stay with us. With Roger Stone, this live interview is going viral despite big tech censorship and the rest of it. Thanks to all of you tweeting it and Facebooking it and sending out the links from newswars.com. That link doesn't get censored as much or banned on video. And remember, the very same establishment trying to silence Mr. Stone is trying to silence us. So thank you all for visiting InfoWarsStore.com. The great products there, the books, the films, the T-shirts, the great supplements, the water filtration, air filtration. Big sale right now. 40 to 70% off all these products. Store-wide free shipping. InfoWarsStore.com. Now, going back to Roger Stone. Roger, please, because a lot of these questions I want to go over are really just advice you're giving the president, and I know he really respects your countenance as a longtime advisor and a former chief advisor. So I really would like you to have the floor and just talk about the race, talk about your views on that, as all Americans have a right to do. When I likened you to Spartacus, because you are the guy in the arena, you are the guy being targeted like nobody else right now, even worse than Trump. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, Teddy Roosevelt. And that's a Spartacus archetype, and you wanted to make a comment on that.
Yeah, it's kind of important, Alex. You know, last week, PolitiFacts, which is financed by the Walter Annenberg Foundation, published a story that said that an interview that I had done regarding Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, was incorrect. I said that Cory Booker, as mayor, had essentially laundered a $600,000 payment through the city watershed authority to his law firm, which he then pocketed. And they say that it's false. No, on the contrary, PolitiFact, not only is it true, but I have written an entire book on the subject, which is entitled Spartacus, the Unauthorized Biography of Cory Booker. This book will be published in late November. And without getting into detail today, I prove definitively the incredible corruption of Cory Booker when he was mayor, including the theft of $600,000 in taxpayers' money laundered through the city water authority to his law firm, to his pockets. Now, to go back to the situation regarding the president, I think it's very important to recognize that everything that is playing out in Washington is playing out with the backdrop of the president's courageous decision to remove our troops from Syria. I have never seen a more ferocious mainstream media neocon-driven backlash than that orchestrated by some elements of the media, going so far at EBC of falsifying footage that was actually at a Kentucky rifle range and calling it violence by the Turks against the Kurds in Syria. They're literally frothing at the mouth on some of the Fox programming. Ironically, I think the president's decision helps him. He ran as a non-interventionist. He made it very clear at the Republican convention, throughout the campaign, and throughout his presidency that he was committed to ending the endless foreign wars that we were giving open-ended commitments to in terms of both blood and treasure, whether it is Iraq, whether it is Afghanistan, whether it is Syria. I think he understands the American people have had enough. And you saw the results in Dallas in that rally not far from you. I saw you drive up in an armored vehicle, which I thought was pretty cool. I think the people are fed up with endless foreign war. And the disinformation regarding Syria is really quite extraordinary. No, all of the Kurds are not Christians. Many of them are Muslims. No, many of the Kurds are Marxists. There's a very substantial radical Marxist element. No, the 200 individual troops that we have in that part of Syria could not have stopped an onslaught from Turkey anyway. And I think the Trump-Pence administration at this point is working to hold together this ceasefire. So those who say that this weakens him with the people, I think are incorrect. Now, does it weaken him in the Senate, where you have a disproportionate number of neocon Republican senators? I think that that is entirely possible, which is why I reiterate that the president should now, today, be using his campaign treasury, which he can legally do, to get his side of all these issues out, whether it is Ukraine, whether it is Syria, in those states where you have wobbly or soft Republican senators. Speaking of Republican senators, a word has to be said about Willard Mitt Romney. If you are a longtime watcher of InfoWars, you know that both on the Alex Jones Show and on The War Room, I warned about Mitt Romney. A man does not run for the U.S. Senate in a state he does not live in, taking a legislative job when he's had an executive position his entire adult life, because he wants to be a junior backbencher in the U.S. Senate. He ran for the Senate in order to launch another bid for president. He not only had the audacity to ask the president to muscle out the Republican state treasurer in Utah, who would have made a great U.S. senator, to clear the Republican primary field for him, and then the president endorsed Willard the Rat. What he's gotten in return is a knife right between the shoulder blades, because Mitt Romney is fired, I think, by both ambition and jealousy. After all, he ran twice for president, after running for the U.S. Senate and successfully for governor. And along comes a New York businessman who's never run for anything, and he wins the presidency. I think John McCain had the same problem, that Trump won the prize that eluded them. But I see this error being compounded, Alex. I saw the president's warm endorsement for Ben Sasse the other day, and Sasse will reward that endorsement. Where the president is very, very popular in Nebraska, he will reward that endorsement with treachery. I don't know who is making these decisions, but putting Mitt Romney in a position where he can challenge the president was not wise. The good news, Donald Trump's approval rating among Republican primary voters, is higher than any president I've ever seen. I mean, I worked for the great Ronald Reagan in the 76, 1980, and 1984 campaigns. He goes down in my book as one of the greatest presidents in American history. His approval rating among Republicans was always in the high 80s, which we thought was phenomenal at the time. But I saw a Florida poll just the other day that showed the president's approval rating at 94 among Florida Republicans. So the bad news for Mitt Romney or Bill Weld, who's actually a friend of mine, despite our ardent disagreement on so many things, or anyone else who wants to challenge Donald Trump for the Republican nomination, is there is no market. There is no vacuum. Donald Trump will be the nominee of his party, and he's remaking the party in his own image. This has always been a historical truth.
Well, you're right, Roger. We got to go to break, but Governor Weld also said Trump should be executed for treason on Ukraine. So I know you've got to can't get into too much of it, but specifically, you called Fiona Hill here on record. It's got national attention last week that you called it here. You talked about the ambassador and warned about Taylor. You also specifically warned about Romney. And then Hillary, we know, wants to get back in. They've got a plan to remove Trump before the election. Then Pelosi becomes president because they get rid of Pence, too. And then she appoints Hillary vice president. And I guess Romney would be the placeholder and, I guess, run against Hillary. We'll talk about all those angles straight ahead with Roger Stone. And Roger Stone is go to communicate with the president, the American people, all of you. He is a top political analyst. The system, the WikiLeaks show, fears him. And they don't just ban people on the internet now. They arrest them. And that is where we are in the fight for this republic and this country. And Roger Stone's going to go a little bit with us into the next hour. He has not spoken to the media in over 4 months. And I was going over the list of questions I had with him, checking over during the break, making sure that doesn't violate any of the things that are out there. It's very Kafkaesque. You can't even mention the things that are out there. And it just shows where free speech is in this country. It's embattled. It's on its knees. But it's coming back. I would really just want to say that Fiona Hill, the Soros moles, McMaster, everything you said a year before came out that he was at this dinner event with these donors talking crap about the president, word for word. That was all confirmed later. New York Post, it was admitted he was fired. How they'd come at Trump, how they'd do it, how they were going to use Ukraine, who the operatives were. No wonder they were so scared of you and I. People thought I knew all this stuff. I knew some of it. You had all the contacts. That's why they were so enraged by you, because literally it was like you had a time machine or something. I mean, a crystal ball. And so now recap what you were right about that you can get into. And then what is your latest emergency portend? Because I remember you telling Owen Schroyer 2 months before the election, he bet a tomahawk steak and all the beer he could drink that, you know, the Republicans would lose the House. And I, unfortunately, you know, had to agree with you. You were proven right, not bashing Owen. But, I mean, you are the Karnak for real. So the president, the world, I mean, top link on Drudge. What do you want to say, Roger? What were you right about that you can recap? And then what's the latest of the over-the-horizon radar?
Well, Alex, I think anybody watching this broadcast understands that I don't direct you what to say. You speak for yourself. I speak for myself.
100%.
And I would have planned today to give the president a warning, because I know many around him are saying, don't worry, Mr. President. The Republicans in the Senate would never vote to remove you. However, this tongue lashing he gave the Republicans the other day, where he pointed out that the Democrats stick together and the Republicans don't, tell me he's already gotten an important message. He needs to take this impeachment inquiry very, very seriously. Now, I don't candidly know anything about Ambassador William Taylor other than what I have read, but I always thought that there were too many holdovers in the Trump administration, particularly in the foreign policy area. And for reasons I never quite understood, the president had a succession of national security advisors who did not share his non-interventionist views. It was General McMaster who brought in Fiona Hill. Fiona Hill, Harvard, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, worked for the Soros Open Society Institute, very clearly not a Trump Republican, to say the least. It appears that she is one of the witnesses in this inquiry. So I guess my message to the president is take this very seriously. Continue to demand total transparency. Stay very focused on those states with wobbly Republican senators. That is where this fight will be won or lost. Here is one of the great pluses of this whole matter, Alex, and that is I had been speaking to Republican and Trump and conservative gatherings around the country, and I'd said repeatedly that the greatest obstacle to the president's reelection was the overconfidence of his supporters. I have absolute confidence in Donald Trump's ability as a campaigner, absolute confidence in his stamina, absolute confidence in his energy, absolute confidence in his communication skills. But everywhere I would go across the country, people would tell me, Trump supporters would tell me, it's going to be a landslide. It's going to be a cakewalk. It's going to be a walk in the park. None of those things are true. They're not true. They weren't true then. They're not true now. But what the impeachment inquiry has done is galvanize the president's support as never before. I spoke to an Americans for Trump gathering in Broward County night before last. And there's an energy level. There's a commitment that was not there before. The Democratic field may seem inconsequential to you today, but that's a bad judgment. Assuming that Hillary Clinton does not enter this race, I believe that Joe Biden's candidacy is already in the ascendancy. He never started very strong to begin with, given that he was an 8-year vice president. I predicted here and elsewhere that Elizabeth Warren was the candidate to watch. She is extraordinarily better organized than anyone on the ground in Iowa. When it comes to New Hampshire, historically, New Hampshire has an affinity for candidates from neighboring states. Henry Cabot Lodge, Michael Dukakis, Bernie Sanders, they all come to mind. Ed Muskie. So it is important to recognize that her candidacy, I think, is not only potent, but that she has a kind of a goofy, likable quality, and she can sound very populist. I mean, she wants to break up Google. Alex, you want to break up Google. She doesn't want to take on the big banks. Alex, you want to take on the big banks. So Republicans who think it would be an easy race, that you can just dismiss Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas, are incorrect. Once the Democratic Party decides which socialist they are going to nominate, and their handmaidens in the Main Street media close ranks behind that candidate, the combination of the mainstream media onslaught on Trump, along with the institutional censorship of conservatives and libertarians and non-liberals and Trump supporters on all of these social media platforms, shows that we will have an extraordinary, close, competitive race. I'm not worried about the president. I'm worried about his supporters. Frankly, I'm worried about some in his campaign who perhaps out of lack of political experience and a great deep-seated belief in the president's skills, believe that this will somehow be easy. Good news, the president has retained Tony Fabrizio, who I believe is the single most brilliant analyst and political strategist in the Republican Party today. He's also a guy who isn't afraid to give his candidates bad news and good, solid advice about how to take polling numbers and actually translate them to action to make them work. That is very good news.
And Rod Drummond, when you got him on the show, again, everything he's broken down has come true. And he was the one worried we were going to lose the House, and he was right in 2018. So let's talk about the next 30 minutes while we have you, some of the other questions that are coming up. We're very honored to have you here with us. I know it's a minefield of what you can and can't get into, but what you said, it was very, very important, very, very central, that I, too, saw a lot of Trump supporters very delusional that he's invincible, nothing's going to happen, when the deep state is openly trying to assassinate him. They're openly trying to break the borders. They're getting illegals signed up to vote. Trump really won by a tsunami. We know that. But election fraud, he almost lost. And so this is a real battle. People better not be overconfident. That's why I think folks like Drudge have shown what the enemy is saying and what the enemy is doing. And I think Drudge, showing all the attacks and a lot of the negative stuff the last few months, has woken a lot of conservatives up that, well, if Drudge is showing what the enemy's saying, then, you know, Trump might be in trouble. And, of course, Drudge was doing that before they made this big move. And that's why I've highlighted some of the negative things that are going on, because conservatives and libertarians and nationals don't need to be in a bubble. We don't need to be in our own echo chamber like the left is. We need to be out there on the street like you and I are, really seeing what's going on. And if people think there was a fight in 2016, this is going to be the big one. And I think that's what we're saying, is we don't have this in the bag if people go CP time. Is that what you're saying?
That's precisely what I'm saying. Republicans need to look at 2018, not 2016. If we are hampered the same way, say, on Facebook, institutionally, all Republicans, of that will be truly problematic.
And that's two of Trump's biggest failures. He hasn't taken action yet against big tech censorship. Says he would take strong action 4 months ago. Hasn't done it. Hasn't stood up for the press that's been persecuted. It's just amazing. Wow. We've got Roger Stone here with us right now live, and it's the hottest interview on talk radio, the internet right now, thanks to all of you spreading the word. Thanks to DrudgeReport.com. We'll be back with hour number three with Roger Stone. Roger Stone is with us, another three segments, and then there's a lot of huge, massive breaking news at Infowars.com and NewsWars.com. Greta Thunberg presses Facebook to increase censorship of people that question her. Wow, a little authoritarian, more like Hitler every day. Big Pharma overplaying measles threat. We've got Trump calling Obama someone involved in treason. Congressman questions Zuckerberg on vaccine safety. We're going to get to all of that. We got more on Fiona Hill coming up. Roger Stone is with us here, and I've got a list of things that he's able to get into here, and they're all very important because he's a top political analyst. They've tried to keep out of the game. What do you make of all these polls? Which ones are real, which aren't? People say, oh, Trump just goes with polls he likes. Well, some polls are more scientific. A lot of them oversample, obviously, Democrats. That's admitted. So what do you make of the current polls out there and some of them that have Trump trailing in the poll that came out today?
First of all, I think it's important, Alex, for people to recognize that a poll is like a snapshot in time, meaning by the time it's tabulated, it is already technically obsolete because people change their minds all the time. They change their minds on the basis of events. They change their minds on the basis of new information and so on. Advertising, all of these things change public perception. Now, one of the things you will hear from Trump supporters is, well, I'm not concerned about the polls that show the president behind now because all the polls almost uniformly showed him behind in 2016. I think that that's an incorrect judgment. Let's talk about the polls in 2016. First, throw out those who purposely oversampled Democrats in order to show Hillary with an artificial lead. There are pollsters like that. They shouldn't be taken seriously. But if you are in the polling business, the worst thing for your business is to be wrong. If you're wrong, no one commissions you to take another poll. I think the mistake of the polls in 2016 was largely methodological, meaning there was a base assumption that the turnout in 2016 would be identical to the turnout in 2012. The same number of urban voters, the same number of rural voters, the same number of African Americans, the same number of Hispanics, the same number of Protestants, the same number of Catholics, the same number of women, the same number of men, and so on. And that turned out to be extraordinarily wrong. The turnout was very different than it was when Barack Obama was on the ballot. Fewer African Americans showed up. Hillary never scored as well as Barack Obama, understandably a historic figure. Trump pulled an enormous rural vote turning out at levels as never before. I remember sitting in the InfoWars studio with you on election night, and I remember when the first returns from Florida came in, and we looked at the returns in Miami-Dade, Broward, in Palm Beach County. And I saw the incredible margin for Hillary Clinton, and I said, Alex, I just don't see how the president is going to make up this kind of ground in the central and northern part of the state. It's not impossible, I told you, but it's very difficult, kind of like drawing to an inside straight. Well, he did exactly that. The turnout in the I-4 corridor and in northern Florida was at record levels, and he outperformed Mitt Romney and before him John McCain substantially, carrying the state of Florida. I feel much better about it. There we are. I feel much better about the state of Florida in the upcoming election because you have a very popular Republican governor in Ron DeSantis. I also think it's more likely it will get an honest count because you have a Republican governor in Ron DeSantis. So the polls should not be poo-pooed, and we'll come back to it on the other side. Nowhere is the president so far behind that he can't make up that ground. He was behind in most places in the close. He closed this race.
Stay there. Is Hillary going to run? You know, Roger Stone mentioned election night 2016, and I think the best short little compilation is at the end of the trailer for Get Me Roger Stone, the big Netflix hit, where they're crying and freaking out, and then we're toasting champagne. But, boy, that was like waving a red flag in front of a bull that's high on PCP. Did they come after us after that? I mean, it was like they were invading Iraq or something, the level of propaganda against Roger and I. We were second only to Trump. And then now Roger is facing the fight of his life. And as an American, obviously, needs our prayers and our support, ladies and gentlemen, now more than ever, because we are all Roger Stone. We're all Donald Trump. We're all Alex Jones today. But here's a little bit from that trailer for Get Me Roger Stone.
Roger saw something that nobody else saw back in the early 80s.
I suggested that Trump should explore a bid for the presidency.
He created Donald Trump as a political figure.
Say what I, loser? What have I lied about?
Have you spoken with the WikiLeaks founder?
You're a rape tonight.
Roger, you can't just say that.
You have to be outrageous to get noticed.
America may be collapsing, but Roger Stone is determined to enjoy it.
I revel in your hatred, because if I weren't effective, you wouldn't hate me.
Well, there you go, and that's why they hate us so much. Roger Stone here with us. He mentioned this earlier. Let me play this clip. Here's Trump a few days ago saying, you know, the Democrats are really nasty and mean and vicious, but at least they stick together. And he went in and lashed at Lindsey Graham, and now Graham is saying, yeah, this stuff in the House is wrong. That Trump's instincts are right. Roger's right. He's got to go after the on-the-fence Republicans and turn his constituents loose on them. That is critical in our message to President Trump, that the audience is vital in getting to him. Undoubtedly, he'll see this interview or excerpts of it. We're going to have a lot of those up on InfoWars later. It's live right now, obviously. But here's what Roger was talking about earlier.
Well, I think the Democrats fight dirty. I think the Democrats are lousy politicians with lousy policy. They want open borders. They don't care about crime. They want sanctuary cities. They don't care about drugs. They don't care about almost anything. They don't care about USMCA. How about that? I think they're lousy politicians. But two things they have. They're vicious, and they stick together.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, and the folks that stick together as the InfoWars family. We wouldn't be on air still if it wasn't for you. And I know Roger's thankful the InfoWars family as well. Roger, I want you to speak to that before you have to go here. And this is a really special, this interview. We can't even tell people really why it's so special. That's what the state of this country right now. You've never backed down from this fight. I can only admire that, even though I know you've had plenty of opportunities to turn on the president and all the nightmare you and your family have been through would be over. But you are definitely an example for all of us to live by. I know InfoWars has stood the test as well, but we haven't been through as deep a fire as you have, and I pray we don't have to be. It's a Jobian trial, a Jobian test, biblically, well, what we're all going through, but you particularly, my friend. And so I hope and pray that you'll be richly rewarded and everything returned to you at the end of this as it was to Job. But getting into Hillary, the fact of why she keeps acting like she's going to run, saying she wants to run, staying in, where you see that going, and what happens if she doesn't jump in, and who you think the presumptive nominee will be currently. I guess you're saying Warren.
Well, first of all, thank you for your kind comments, Alex. I don't want to talk about any of that. I do want to resume my analysis of the Democratic field. I really think Bernie Sanders, who began the race in very strong position, having had run before, having had a base of supporters, having a great finance list, a ready-made organization in all 50 states, his time sadly has come and gone. Clearly, he had a heart attack. If it were Donald Trump, the headlines would have been, President suffers massive heart attack. But because it was Bernie Sanders, it was Senator Sanders experiences minor chest pain until his campaign finally came clean. Now, we wish him well and a speedy recovery and good health and long life. But while his candidacy was interesting 4 years ago, there is no joy in his candidacy. He just seems angry all the time. He's just angry, yelling at people. I mean, I can't tell where Larry David starts and Bernie Sanders leaves off. Yeah. And I think that those votes, where they disperse, becomes very important. I think Elizabeth Warren gets a disproportionate number of them. I've said this for some time. I think those who think she's easy to beat need to look again. Clearly, Mayor Pete Buttigieg does represent an important constituency within that party. His fundraising has been extraordinarily impressive for a guy who is the mayor of South Bend. And new polls show him running third in Iowa, which is not insignificant. Joe Biden's candidacy was destined to fade no matter what. His largest single obstacle was his advocacy of the war on drugs. He used to call it the Biden bill. This is the 94 crime bill, which has incarcerated literally hundreds of thousands of poor people and black people. And
it's way more than that. Millions.
Probably millions, I guess. For the first time, nonviolent crime of possession of small amounts of drugs. This is a failed, ignominious.
And notice Trump gets no credit when he federally decriminalized marijuana. Something Obama promised to do.
Well, first of all, who is it that gave us sentencing reform urged on him by Kim Kardashian, thankfully? And this is going to afford, in the end, hundreds of thousands, if not more, of people unfairly incarcerated a second chance. But the war on drugs has failed. It is ruining lives. It is.
By the way, you don't give yourself credit. You heavily advise Trump to decriminalize the marijuana and nonviolent offenders let them out. I mean, you're giving Kardashian a credit. That's great. And, of course, you can give Jared and Ivanka that. But you, as the political advisor, are the one that have been hammering that into Trump.
Well, something I believe very deeply in, because the war on drugs has been an ignominious, racist, expensive failure. And this has always been my view. If the president were to completely decriminalize marijuana, cannabis, before the next election, it would allow him to make deep inroads into traditionally Democratic voter groups.
Well, he did it partially, but then the last attorney general blocked him.
That is correct. But he could, with the stroke of a pen, take it off of the Schedule One list, which is exactly what he should do. The public is there. When 67% of Florida Republicans, for example, are in favor of legalized cannabis, this is an issue that time has come. I know Big Pharma is against it. I know they won't be able to sell their drugs. I know they won't be able to clean up on opioids if we legalize cannabis. I really hope the president will take it.
I agree, but can you speak to Hillary? I mean, will she jump in? The word is she's telling people she is going to run. I mean, just a few years ago, she said she was. Everybody said no, so she backed off. What's the word on that?
Well, I get mixed signals. Again, both Mark Penn and Doug Schoen who have worked her in the past, for her in the past, say that she's going to run. I put some stock in that. Those are very, very savvy guys. She would bring a lot of strength to the race, as we said earlier, but I don't know whether she has the physical stamina. This is a marathon. This is a brutal experience. Trump has demonstrated that he has, even at his age, the stamina for another go. He outworked her last time. He would outwork her this time. I think in the end that she does not run, but I have obviously no inside information.
We have one final segment with Roger Stone. And again, ladies and gentlemen, he has a lot of courage. He's gone through a lot, and he has not sold the president or America out. And in today's modern age, that is a scarce commodity, but it's what this country pins all its hopes on, is you out there, listeners and viewers, that still support this broadcast and spread the word about the live feeds like DrudgeReport.com. It's a very newsworthy interview, obviously, but Drudge Top Linked, we're very thankful for that, because just because something's newsworthy, that doesn't mean people promote it. But Drudge is doing that, and you're doing that, listeners and viewers. And tell people about local radio stations you're listening to, local TV stations you're watching. We're number one on Cloud TV. Any platform we're allowed to be on, we become number one. People are hungry for this. You look at the CNN whistleblowers, you know, information. Most of the employees hate CNN, know it's all a lie. America and the world's ready for freedom. We'll be back with the final segment with Roger Stone. Now, as soon as Roger leaves us, we're going to take the full interview that he just did, and we're going to post it in the article that's top linked on DrudgeReport.com so folks can find the live feed, top linked on DrudgeReport.com. We have constitutional lawyer Robert Barnes, who I really respect, who's one of the smartest people I know. I mean, Roger's one of them, and then literally Barnes is. And then, believe me, the Trump that's on TV, the one behind the scenes, even smarter. Wouldn't say Trump dumbs it down, but you know, he doesn't always talk like Don Corleone. Trump, like, finishes your sentences. It's actually scary. These are smart people. That's why I love what I do, because I get to be around all these cool people. And you, the audience, that are amazing folks that I run into on the street, black, white, Hispanic, old, young, the beauty in your eyes, the soul, the spirit, it's really amazing. So the journey is the destination. And, yeah, we get persecuted for what we do, but you know what? At the end of the day, that's why evil's evil. And if you're good, they're going to come after you. That's what Jesus said. So we're only here because of you, and we appreciate you all spreading the word, because that is the king currency on this planet, is your word of mouth. So I salute the listeners and viewers, and I know Roger is very thankful to you all. He always expresses that to me privately and on air. Roger, just in closing, I could ask questions forever. I hope you can join us again. And I don't want to ask any questions I'm not supposed to, but I mean, is there anything you want to say? Any closing comments?
Yeah, I guess it's this, Alex. At the end of the day, the reason the president will get reelected is because he has delivered. It would be different if that were not the case. But there is no way the American people can ignore 6 million new jobs, 650,000 new manufacturing jobs, wage growth at the fastest pace in American history, billions of dollars coming back into the country to be invested here, expand businesses here, create jobs here, unemployment at the lowest point in 50 years. Every time there is a quarter, job estimates are exceeded. This economy is red hot. If Donald Trump had predicted any of this in the 2016 campaign, he would have been shouted off the stage. He would have been mocked. But he has delivered bigly for the American people. Now, I particularly am happy about the criminal justice reform. This is an issue I've been writing about, marching about, talking about for 20 years. The war on drugs has been a failure. The drug abuse is a public health problem, not a criminal justice problem. I'm not talking about drug kingpins. I'm talking about average people.